Are you envious because I am generous? Is really the ultimate statement of this parable this morning. In the Greek New Testament language, it literally reads, "Is your eye evil because I am good?" In one of my most favorite sitcoms, and arguably of one of the best and long-lived sitcoms of all time, Seinfeld, there was the occasion when Jerry began dating a woman who, as it turned out, previously dated Jerry's ultra nemesis and postal worker from down the hall, Newman. One day as Jerry was entertaining his new sweetheart, good old Newman stopped by, certainly for no good reason, and took notice that his ex, Margaret, was sitting on Jerry's sofa. After exchanging brief hellos, Newman leaves and Jerry is left with Margaret to try and figure out this unprecedented and outrageous turn of events. How on earth could anyone date Newman? If you're familiar with the show, then you know that the very next scene has Jerry in the coffee shop discussing the previous scene with a friend. This particular friend is Elaine. After explaining to Elaine that his current girlfriend used to date Newman, of all people, Elaine ponders out loud, "Perhaps there's more to Newman than meets the eye." To which Jerry replies, "Oh no, there isn't. There's less. In fact, I've looked into his eyes. He's pure evil." Of course, these are just characters on a show, but have you noticed that you can tell a lot about a person by looking into their eyes? She has kind eyes. He has warm eyes. She has gentle eyes. He gave me the evil eye. The keystone of this parable that Jesus tells rests on this punchline of sorts that we find at the end. Are you envious? Because I am jealous. Are you envious because I'm generous? Actually, is what's read at the latter section of this parable from Matthew. Again, literally in Greek, it means, "Is your eye evil because I am good?" We do well to read Matthew's message in its larger context. In Matthew's sixth chapter, Jesus has warned of the dangers of having an evil eye. As he says, "The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness?" I feel a little compelled to say with a tight lip, "Newman." The eyes are indeed a window into the soul. Looking into someone's eyes, we almost instinctively know that there's something different in that experience, something we intuit, something we hadn't noticed otherwise, something we sense that cannot be determined by observation alone. What people see in our eyes is beyond what they see externally. This can be unsettling, even frightening. It's difficult to pretend with our eyes, isn't it? There's a lot we can feign with our voice, our body, and our gestures. But the eyes, that's harder, maybe even impossible. What do we do when we are not being completely honest or forthright? We look away. We look down. The kids in the room, we know how to look past those looks. Us parents know how to see when you're not being forthright and telling us the truth, don't we? And there's a reason why we don't make eye contact. Because to see into someone's eyes is to see into their soul. Perhaps what you see is not understandable or explainable in the moment, but you do indeed see something. Something true, something hidden, something deep. What do people see when they look into your eyes? Or what is it that you wish people would see if they looked into your eyes, into your soul? What if we had the chance to look into God's eyes? What might we see? What is at the heart of God? What will you see looking into God's very soul? Well, at least according to the parable we heard today, we will see generosity. Sheer, generosity. Today we are offered another glimpse through the life of Jesus, which is essentially God's human life, into the heart and mind of God. We may all have a sense of what it is, what is fair and not fair, but what God deems fair is most likely, if not certainly, out of any human category of fairness. Now, how many of us with siblings recall growing up feeling we had to do much more than others in our family? Or how many firstborns eventually complain that their parents let younger brothers and sisters have more liberty than they had at that age? Isn't it true that one of the first things we learn in life is to develop a view of what seems fair and what does not? Those of you who have more than one child, can you hear the kids right now in the back seat yelling at each other? It's not fair. 12 or 13 years ago, I loved spending the day with my then 6-year-old niece and 4-year-old nephew, who are now 18 and 16. And I remember just getting a kick out of how those two kids would make a game out of anything. And guess who made the rules for those games? If you guessed the bossy 6-year-old, you're right. She would come up with the games to play and then conveniently change the rules as they went along. And they weren't out of convenience for the complying 4-year-old either. But inevitably, I would eventually hear the 4-year-old say, "That's not fair." And I'd agree with him and tell her to stop it. But we do early on acquire a sense of fair and unfair, even as children. Or how long have you been a member of this church? How long do you think those sitting near you have been members of this church? Somewhere in the crowd is someone who has been here the longest. And likewise, there is someone here who has been a member perhaps for the shortest time. Members in smaller churches tend to know these people almost instinctively. Do you think those who have been members here for a long time should have more benefits? Perhaps more access to pastoral care? More influence with the vestry or leadership? Maybe be first in line at the potlucks? Of course, these are absurd questions, but Jesus almost always uses absurd stories to make his point about the nature of God. Perhaps these questions cause us to understand better the sense of outrage expressed by the longer-serving laborers in today's gospel story who saw their treatment as a matter of unfairness. Now, don't we feel a little sympathy for those who work the longest? These hired hands labored harder and longer and got the same pay. How can we not feel a sense of pain or injustice for them? Living in community, and especially in our work harder, earn more money culture, we inevitably have experiences that allow us to identify with the workers in today's gospel story. This parable is actually among the few that really gets people talking about economic justice and injustice after church. Author and priest Ken Kesselis writes, "But as mature Christians, one of the first things we learn from today's gospel reading is that Jesus didn't care much about fairness or unfairness in the way we tend to think about it. He was not concerned about the ethics of business or labor management relations or who got to what place first. Through the story in today's gospel, Jesus turns our normal views upside down, shaking them out so we can more clearly see the truth of God's values or see more clearly into God's eyes or God's heart. He challenges our religious assumptions, affirming a radical understanding of God and our relationship with God that upsets our conventional theological views and even the tenets of popular psychology. Jesus succeeds in shocking us, doesn't he, out of our common misunderstandings of God, by affirming a deeper insight into the character and purposes of God. He wants to shake us out of our usual self-understanding by opening us up to a deeper awareness of God, of ourselves, in an effort to transform us, each of us, to be more like God. Jesus sets out to transform us more into the image of God. Jesus wants us to experience this parable as a way to learn what lies beyond viewing the events as simply unfair or fair, to catch a glimpse of the utter limitlessness of God's generosity. He wants us to understand that the worth of human beings is not measured by how much we earn, how much we're paid, how well we perform, or by any of our usual measures like status and popularity, social achievement, productivity, wealth, or physical appearance. Jesus wants us to know that our worth as human beings is absolutely affirmed by God, who guarantees our value as human beings. Not because of anything we have done or can do, but because of God's creative and life-affirming love for us. Jesus wants us to know that in the face of our limited worldly understanding of what fair and what is unfair, God works with a different reality, in a different direction, and by different standards. Today, Jesus reminds us again that all that we have is a gift from God. This parable reveals that all of us have come to this vineyard where much work has been done long before we arrived, and yet the check still comes. This parable reminds us that whatever we have is more than we deserve, because God chooses to give to the last as he does to the first. After all, it's all God's. So rejoice and be grateful. And perhaps more importantly, remember to be grateful and to rejoice for others. When we look into the eyes and into the heart of God, that is, when we look to Jesus, we find that God is overwhelmingly and absurdly generous. Amen.